monster who came up the river. This huge monster came up from the ocean. He would open his huge mouth and inhale anything that was in his path. He soon had all the salmon and other fish like sturgeon and eels, all eaten, and because he was so huge, he began taking in the deer and all food animals of the forest. Soon there was nothing left for the people, and they were getting hungry, and babies and old people began to die. Finally, someone went to Coyote and told him he would have to kill the monster. He got a length of a vine that is called Coyote's rope. He tied one end around his waist and coiled the other around his arm. He got some pitchy kindling and flints for starting a fire. He stood on a far hill and called the monster a shameful name. He teased him until the monster began trying to eat him. Every time the mouth opened, Coyote would throw out some useful thing. The monster was near collapsing. The fire got so hot that the monster died and went back into the sea. Some parts of him clung to the sides of the riverbank, so it was rough like it was before Bonneville Dam was built.
That was Don Sampson, Pio Pio Mox Mox, chief of the Walla Walla tribe, narrating The Monster Who Came Up the River, written by beloved Umatilla storyteller Esther Motanik. Don Sampson is director of the Affiliated Tribes of Northwest Indians Climate Change Project and has been a leader for decades in tribal government and non-tribal agencies. My name is Jan Hawken, and I'm a documentary filmmaker from Portland and a programmer at KBOO Community Radio. Well, it's an honor to be with you today on KCUW, Don, to talk about this fable written by Esther Motanik and to discuss the place of Native storytelling in the climate justice movement.
Thanks, Janice. Great to be here with you today.
Well, let's start by talking about Esther Motanik, who wrote this story. Can you tell us some about her?
Yeah, actually, Esther was quite well known here. She was quite a soprano singer. She was, of course, went to college and was one of the first young women, Native women, that became one of the queen of the Pendleton Roundup. Her father was a well-known leader and businessman here, Parson Motanik. He was a member of Cayuse tribe, and he was the second Native American on the Umatilla Indian Reservation to purchase an automobile.
That was quite something. What decades are we talking about here?
Yeah, well, this is back in 1915 when he had his first automobile. There's a famous picture of him. You know, he was he's posed in a traditional headdress. He was a farmer, rancher, had horses and cattle. His children here, of course, which included Esther, and she was one of the first Native American women to be named to the Queen of the Pendleton Roundup. His son Art, Esther's brother, was active in the Roundup for 70 years and was also a well-known singer during the Happy Canyon Pageant. He was there. Don was there at my father's chief ceremony and sang. And so, very talented, educated family here on the Umatilla Indian Reservation, but also carried on a lot of the traditional knowledge, including the storytelling, the legends, the history of our tribe. And she and my grandmother grew up together, Carrie Sampson, and my father, Carl Sampson, the late Carl Sampson, who was the former chief, also named Pio Pio Mox Mox. And so, very close connection to our family. Her son, one of the sons, Don Motanik, the grandchildren, he's a forester and works on many issues across the U.S. with tribes on forest management. So very respected family. And, you know, Esther was one of those very energetic but also very powerful, progressive woman in her age.
Women have also been storytellers in many Native cultures. Can you say a little about that?
Yeah, that's what I learned. That's what I grew up as we were younger. My grandmother was a great storyteller as well. And oftentimes in the late fall and winter season is when the storytelling would occur. And it was a way of teaching the morals and the values of our people, but also the history and the connection to the land and the animals, the fish, the air, the earth. And so these really demonstrated to us the importance of our relationship and reciprocity with the land, understanding that the animals and fish were relatives, as were the earth, our mother. And so that was part of the teaching. And many of them had values and lessons to be learned. Of course, Coyote, in this story, Spiliai, was a teacher. He was also a trickster. And he was often had great courage and was fearless and did a lot of things to help the people. But at the same time, he was also sly and tricking people into oftentimes doing something they didn't expect to do.
I'd like to talk with you more about the coyote character in Native storytelling, but also say a bit for our listeners about why this story was chosen to be included in the film I'm working on with a team here in Oregon, including Kathy Sampson Cruza. The film is titled Necessity, Rail Rivers and the Thin Green Line, and it includes a series of animated paintings by Asa Wright, an artist and enrolled member of the Klamath tribes, that will accompany your narration in this story. In addition to this being a local fable that grounds the film in regional indigenous storytelling, can you say something about what the monster and some of the other images in the story mean to you?
Yeah, you think about what's happening now. These are really demonstrate that our knowledge, indigenous knowledge, is ancient, thousands and thousands of generations, not just thousands of years, and that these knowledges were passed down from one generation to the next, oftentimes through stories, but also through these teachings. And these stories were brought out in the winter time because that was a time where the people were still and were surviving through the winter. They had gathered their foods all spring, summer, and fall and prepared them. And so this was the time for the teaching, and this is where the elders, not just the parents, but the grandparents, the aunts and uncles, were teachers amongst the people. And these were stories about the morals of our people, indigenous connection to the land. And so this story really talks about this animal, this monster who was greedy and came back up the river and began to eat everything. And the long story has a lot of different aspects about how the animals were made from the body of this monster, and that were eaten. They came out and were thrown to different parts of the land, and that's where they came from. There's a story about as the monster was dying, one of the last ones to come out the anus of the monster was the stink bug. We call him Titi, and that was why he is the way he is, because he came out the opposite end. And so many of these stories are related and talk about the connection of the creation of the land, creation of the animal people, and they go to the beginning of time when the Netitite, our human beings, were coming to this earth, coming to this land, and how the animal people all stood forward and were called upon. The men in particular came forward to be the salmon, the nusach. And the responsibility of salmon was to go to the great body of water, the ocean, and gather food up and bring that body, his body, back so that the Netitite, the human beings, would have food to eat. The nusach, that was his responsibility. And his sacred name is Waikanish. And when we have those ceremonies every year, we honor Waikanish for following the law, what we call Tamanwit, the law that the Creator gave us to live by. And in return, our Netitite, our Indian people, are supposed to take care of those animals, take care of the river, which is the blood of our earth mother, take care of all the things that the Creator bestowed for us, gifted us at the beginning of time. And these are part of our Still, our ceremonies that we practice, our spiritual and religious beliefs, they are sacred and holy. And so we continue to remind ourselves through song and through these stories, these legends, these prophecies about our obligation and our connection to the land, our relationships. Same way goes on with the roots and the berries and all of the foods that were given Indian names. We honor and respect them today. So that's a little bit of history about our people and the relationship to these stories and our relationship to the earth. And we're seeing things that are happening now that we had heard about in prophecies, and we're seeing these impacts on the land because the non-Indian people have basically abused the land and forgot what their role and responsibility is as equals, and having a reciprocal obligation to protect things as those also provide for us as well as the human beings.
So the monster in this story has different dimensions to it, and that we are all taking from and depend on the creatures in the world around us, which is a different relationship to nature than colonial settler culture, which views the natural world as a resource to be tamed, controlled, or extracted from. So in this story, the monster is, in a sense, part of nature itself, but there is a warning that things are out of balance, of an exploitive relationship to nature, and Coyote embodies resistance to that, resistance to the monster that takes over, that devours. So the story could be read as a metaphor for colonialism. Would you agree with that kind of interpretation?
Absolutely, and I think it's the human nature that we as human beings oftentimes have the ability to think in a different way. And you'll see this all over the world, but particularly here in America, when the immigrants came here, they began to exploit the land, and their perspective was that they owned things, that they had a right to take things and use them for their own rich and greed and power. And I think that's really what Coyote was always telling us, is that you have to be humble, and this is the way that our people were raised. You have to share. You have to be respectful. You have to know what reciprocity is, which means you take only what you need and you give back. And that's the importance of this way of life that we had. And I think that is really what's happening, is that this story kind of illustrates that, that things will change. The people, the salmon will be gone. The food will be disappear. And we're seeing that happen right today because of the industrialization of our country, our native country here. It was a beautiful, productive country 400, 500 years ago, and it's been exploited much like Europe was in the 1200, 1500s. And now we're seeing the impacts, whether it be dams on the river, polluted waters, we're seeing air pollution, we're seeing climate change, which is increasing these catastrophic wildfires. The fossil fuel industry and industrialization has transformed this earth. And now this earth is much stronger than we think and is more powerful than we could imagine. We're insignificant. And there was a time where we lived in balance. And that's what we're trying to do now, is refine that balance and that respect. And so indigenous knowledge and these stories and the wisdom that we bring from these generations is very useful today, not only just for our indigenous people, but for all people around the world, and that they have to learn to live in balance with the earth, respect things. And I think that's really part of what the story tells, and many other stories. We have prophecies that projected that we'd be seeing these things now, and indeed that's what's happening. And so as indigenous people, we have to be strong. We have to go back to our indigenous values and our lifestyle.
In closing, can you say a little more about how you would weave together the themes of tragic loss and trauma on the one hand, as part of Indigenous history that's so important to be told and remembered, as well as the stories of creative resistance and resilience? for many of us on the documentary team, Coyote represented that creative and clever side of fighting an enemy that is in many ways more powerful than you. So how do you think about those two sides of storytelling and a path forward for all of us?
Well, you know, that's as I mentioned, Coyote was a teacher, and the creator Namipia sent him to teach us. And there were times when we were going the wrong way, or we fought within each other, or against each other, or did something wrong, he came back to teach us the right way of life, how to live. And so today, as Indigenous people, we are banding together across the United States, across countries around the globe, and the knowledge and the experience and the truth that we bring about how we live in harmony with the earth is really what's guiding people now. They're starting to listen finally after all these years. When we were exploited and the genocide that occurred, our lands taken, our culture, our language taken, boarding schools, all of that is now coming full circle, and our people are beginning to strengthen, renewing our language, renewing our connection, renewing our spirituality. We think that will be what leads the world into a better future.
And a path forward for all of us.
Yeah, and I think that's really important. We have a new generation of people, young people coming up. You know, you think of the Greta Thunberg as one example of people saying, look, we can't just think of ourselves and short-term gain over the long-term future of our children like us. And they're speaking up, and they find that connection with Indigenous people because we care about the seven generations that follow. You know, we only borrow this land from our children, and we're obligated and duty-bound to give it to them better than it was. And so that is really our responsibility. So that is something that I think is true amongst many tribes and Indigenous people around the world.
Well, Don Sampson, I hope we can have more conversations about Native storytelling and climate justice. We've been recognizing this story by Esther Motonic, but as you say, there are many stories to tell, and they play in all cultures a vital role and have an important place and in inspiring people during a time that can seem bleak and hopeless, but also as we try to find a way forward through this climate catastrophe we're in.
Yep. We have to be Coyote. We have to be creative. We have to think right. Sometimes I get called Coyote, but I think you're a Coyote too, Janice.
Yes. I'm honored. I'm so honored to be a Coyote with you. This is Jan Hawken talking today with Don Sampson, chief of the Walla Walla tribe, about the story, The Monster Who Came Up the River, that will also be included in the film, Necessity, Rail Rivers and the Thin Green Line.
Sisters have died. Over 500 years has washed away our fears and strengthened our pride. Now we turn back the tide. We will no longer hear your commands. We will slide your control from our lands. Redirect the flame of our anger. yourself.